Welcome to the program as the Tampa Bay Lightning tie things up series at ones. Welcome to the program. Jeff Merrick alongside Justin Bourne standing by for Anthony Stewart, although we may, Bourne, have to call an audible and go to the bullpen and get our man Berkey. We'll see what where Stewie's at. Bill Guerin, by the way, joins us bottom of the hour. Perhaps the most busy general manager in the NHL by way of making trades and signing players with much more business still to come for the Minnesota Wild. Bourne, let's get it right into last night, and we'll park the awards conversation for when there are more of us here on this program, because the debates tend to get lively when you hand out awards, when you hand out ribbons and say, you're number one. People tend to get their backs up, as we've seen. Twitter's a wonderful place for that. What did you make of last night? How did you see that game that saw Tampa go up 3 and Dallas chip and claw and body check their way back to make it close?
Well, it feels like a series for Tampa Bay where they are beat up, man. Like, they are really at the physical end of their capabilities. So when they got up 3-0, it almost felt like there was a sense of, like, okay, can we get through this one without having the pedal down for 60 minutes? Because they've been through a grind, right? Like Columbus, the Islanders, the Bruins, like, that's been a grind. So there's almost a sense of maybe we can get away with sort of coasting for a bit here. And it just can't. There's just no free moments for them. And Dallas made it hard on them right to the buzzer, which is everything they didn't want to happen. But they did get the 2 points. Well, I guess not the 2 points. They got the W. That's what really counts. But definitely, it still would have taken a lot out of them. Dallas won't go away.
They won't, and that's the that's testament to not just those players, but certainly that entire coaching staff. It's a tough team to not like. I mean, I know that they're and Corey Perry has plenty of detractors. We understand that by this point. We know that there are a lot of players that don't like playing against people like Jamie Benn. But just the nature of the season that Dallas has had, all the distractions and stories that come along with what the Dallas Stars are, to me, it's a tough team not to like. And it's also tough not to really like the skill of the Tampa Bay Lightning. And the power play last night returned, specifically the Palat goal, or should I say the Palat shot after Kucherov did pretty much everything to keep that puck hot, including a gorgeous pass that afterwards Rick Bowness pretty much said, yeah, we got to be better. We know that pass is coming. We got to take it away.
Yeah. What's crazy with, like, really good power plays is there tends to be something that's been established that other teams worry about. And I think that what's happened with Tampa Bay's power play is in this playoffs, they haven't had Steven Stamkos, who's there for most of the season. And usually it's like, all right, got to take away that Stamkos one-timer. And then that opens other things up, right? Because teams hedge towards one particular thing. There hasn't been that thing for teams to hedge towards. I thought that establishing early on that bumper play into Braden Point, that kind of had teams thinking about, had Dallas thinking about the Kucherov shot, the point option. They kind of let it slip a little bit that they can still make that seam play. So if you look back through this playoff run, when the Tampa Bay power play has been good, they've established something early, and they scored three power play goals in two games earlier in this postseason run. Both times there was a play where they established a shot, the next time the team hedged to defend it, and then they made the pass off of that. So not having Stamkos has hurt them because they haven't had that one thing, so it's important that they establish something early in their power plays, and then they become tough to defend.
And speaking of the power play, we saw a little bit of a different look yesterday from the Tampa Bay Lightning. Kucherov went to that flank position. We've seen Sergachev in that spot.
He should stay there.
And in front is Clark. Would you just leave Palat there? Let's not overthink this thing.
Yeah, no, I like what they're doing with that setup. They've had sort of the Toronto setup with Kucherov coming down the left flank, which is not his one-timer side. I like him on the, where the one-timer's a threat, where he can pass it into point, go across the seam. I like their setup last night.
All right. Nikita Kucherov yesterday, you always look for, and if Berkey was on the show today, I'm sure he'd talk about his love of grumpy hockey players. Like, if there's one thing that we know about Berkey is that he loves grouchy players. He loved Chris Pronger, loved Ryan Kessler. Like, he likes grouchy, show up to the rink in a bad mood kind of players. Of all the players that are left in the playoffs right now, and that's only two teams. Nikita Kucherov might just be the grumpiest, where Anton Khudobin might be the liveliest, the funnest guy, the instant headline, the great, you know, Voltairean smile, all of it. Kucherov is the opposite, and he had a tough game yesterday as we bring in Anthony Stewart into the conversation. Stewie, this was a tough game for Nikita Kucherov, pounded by Jamie Benn. I like how you called that accidentally on purpose last night. That was good. Slams into the boards with Jamie Oleksiak. You know, that was a real tough one. And all he does is get up, put up, you know, primary assists, dances the Dallas Stars, went off to fix his visor that was smeared with blue paint from the vodka ad in the corner, and came back and was, you know, Stewie, I don't know that I want to call him a one-man wrecking ball, but he was pretty close to it. Like, that was a great performance last night by Kucherov.
Yeah, it was definitely a tough night for him to start off at the top of the game there. And I think if he didn't get those two assists in the first period, I think he was probably going to go nuclear and chop someone in half or just spontaneously combust. But it just shows how talented he is, because, you know, you saw him. He was even fumbling the puck a couple times on the power play, a couple giveaways. But it's so talented. All he needs is one break, and he can really turn the game around. So I remember it was the one game, I think it was the 8-3 blowout last round, and we're like, oh, we haven't really noticed Kucherov. And then he goes and scores that goal, and then we look at the clock sheet here. He's got 5 points. So he can really turn it on. He's one of those guys that he can turn it on at any given moment. But if that was me and I had those that start, I definitely probably would have snapped.
What did Justin, what did you make of Kucherov last night?
Well, yeah, I mean, he's just so integral to this team. With the absence of Stamkos and Point hurt and Cirelli hurt, like, you know, you need a guy like Kucherov to be special for you, and he was that last night. Like, to Berkey's point about liking grumpy players, I think he likes guys that get grumpy and go out there and spear you in the groin when they're mad. Kucherov's a guy, you know, he'll take it out on himself, and he won't be grumpy in a way that I think most GMs enjoy. But as Stewie said, he got a couple of points, got on the board, got feeling good, and got things turned around. You're right. If you don't get a couple of points after starting like that, you might just take the rest of the night off. So good for him for sticking with it.
All right. And further to that discussion about grumpy hockey players, since you're a couple of minutes late getting back from your skate, I'm going to put you on the spot here, Stewie. Who is, from your experience in the NHL, the grumpiest or grouchiest teammate you ever had? Who was the guy that was just, you know, hated everything, hated oxygen, like hated everything about everything?
I'm going to have to say Ron Hainsey, because I was pretty, like a pretty rambunctious guy, yelling, screaming, just yelling for no reason. And he'd always just be like, shut up, Stu, where everyone else would thought it was pretty entertaining. So he was pretty grumpy. I remember Anderson was pretty in that. He was a grumpy guy. And I remember Olli Jokinen. He used to come in the morning and tell me the problems of the team every single morning. And I'd be like, why are you telling me? I'm a rookie. I can't change this. You're the captain. So,
I'll be honest. Black
the power play. Oh, he's like, oh, what do you think of the power play? It sucks. And I'm like, yeah, I wish I could get on it. That's how bad it is.
That, truly, though, like Black Cloud Club, that was a thing that was established for a couple of teams I was on, where there's just like a group of guys who they needed to get it off their chest every day, how stupid the power play formation is, how stupid the choice of personnel is, why the lines make no sense. And it's almost like you just got to let those guys get it out. Like, nothing's going to change. Just go ahead and say what you got to say. It is funny that, you know, we sit here and criticize this, that, and the other thing about a team. It's not unique to us. The guys on the team are going, well, this is stupid. Why are we doing that too? And that's just the life of a hockey team. There's 20 guys. You can't make everyone happy.
I love it. I know I would imagine it would be miserable to have a full dressing room of guys like that. Like, that would be insufferable if you had an entire room like that. But a couple of like grumpy guys that just get out there and Oscar the Grouch, Stadler and Waldorf, every single day at the rink, I would think that after a while it might become pretty entertaining. Is that true or is that false?
It's entertaining for a little bit, but you're like, it gets old after a while where, you know, the guy sort of has something to say about absolutely everything. Yeah, it's funny at the bar and you're chirping the team or the coach or whatever it may be. But, you know, if you're in a playoff battle or you're in the playoffs, you need guys that are buying in and getting excited. So some guys, they do it to sort of entertain, but there are some guys that are just genuinely grumpy where you're like, you don't even want to be around them. And I remember, you know, playing with a guy and, you know, the strength coach would be all over him, and he'd be like teasing the strength coach, being like, "Hey, look, I'm eating a donut. What do you think of this?" And right in his face, taking a big bite out of it. So jeez. I'd be like, "It's kind of funny, but it's going against the overall, you know, program of what the team's trying to establish."
Well, that's such an important line to draw. Like, there's the grumpy guys who are kind of goofing around about it, but still committed to the program. Then there's genuine dissidents, right, who don't want to do what the coach wants them to do, and not just dislike, you know, their line mates, but actually will pout and not play as hard because they've got the line mates. So it's one thing to complain about things and go out there and put in your 100% effort. Then there's the opposite of that. There aren't a lot of teams this deep in playoffs who have a lot of dissidents. You know, it's, you generally, guys may complain, but they're still giving it their best effort. So there is an important delineation there.
All right, back to the game from last night. And it's a 3-2 win by the Tampa Bay Lightning over the Dallas Stars. The series is all tied up at once. We focused a lot on the Tampa side of things and how they were able to do this and mainly build up a first period lead and then hang on. From the Dallas point of view, might have been one of the best games in the playoffs we've seen from John Klingberg. And, you know, not just that shot pass to Janmark, which was just gorgeous, but the shot that Pavelski tips, you know, eluding traffic, taking pressure off, like all of it. Do you guys just have a quick thought on what we saw last night from John Klingberg? I know when we talk about that blue line, we talk a lot about Miro Heiskanen, but what do you guys make of Klingberg specifically last night? Justin, we'll start with you.
The sifter. I love the sifter. That's the shot from the point where it's like zero intention of like hurting anyone, ripping it in the net. Just find a little spot. And I don't know how, if this is how he does it, but I played the point on the power play in college. And like, it's kind of like you're seeing layers past yourself, right? There's the first guy trying to block your shot. There's the next layer usually in front of the net. Then there's the goaltender. And it's impossible to get a big wind-up and pick spots. But if you can pick a spot that can sift it through all three layers and just get it off quick, okay, man, he's really effective at that.
Okay, let's pause on that term for 1 second. So the first time I heard the term sifter was at the Memorial Cup in Red Deer. And Colby and I think Todd was there too, Warner. We were having breakfast with Warren Reichel, who was then, of course, you know, Windsor Spitfires. And we were talking about Sergachev, and he was talking about all the different kinds of shot in between, like, you know, bites of his bacon and eggs, all the different kinds of shots, slap shot, wrist shot, snap shot, sifter. He just sort of slides that in there. And we're like, what's a sifter? Like, when did the term sifter enter the hockey vernacular? Like, was I asleep my entire life, or is this a relatively new thing here, guys?
Well, hello. I guess I'll take that over.
I guess, yeah, there you go,
Justin,
Stewie.
Had enough. He dropped the quote of the day, and he had called it a day. But, I've never heard of that term, too. But what I like about Klingberg, he's just got his head up all the time. So I don't know if this is a new Swedish style. But all these Swede players, they sort of come in there and they're making that play with their head up. So I think with that play where he made that shot pass, the goalie may have thought that he was shooting because he looks like he was looking to pick a corner. So he's just very cerebral. You know, he's got 6 points in his last 5 games. I like big, strong D that can skate, and Klingberg is one of those guys. And just seeing those plays that he's making, those heads-up hockey plays, I think that should really be you know, the blueprint for young defensemen. You know, most guys would just come in and try to rip a clopper top shelf. Here he is, shot redirect. So that's something on, and I don't know if I should be working on that with 12-year-olds and 13-year-olds, but it's a play that works. And even if the, you know, that it doesn't redirect into the net, there's going to be a rebound for a second, third opportunity. So I love those plays. I love those little sifter plays, and I'll be sure to add that now, that terminology into.
Okay.
I had the mute button on my very complex button.
You had the mute button on? Okay. Button off. When did sifter enter the vernacular? For me, it was Red Deer Memorial Cup talking about then Windsor Spitfire Mikhail Sergachev with his former GM Warren Reichel. When was it for you, sifter?
Uh, I played with Andrew McDonald, the defenseman. I played with him in the East Coast League. He was actually down for a little bit. And he was unbelievable. To Stewie's point about having the head up, like, he never looked down at the puck. So if he could find a little window to sift that thing through there, he absolutely would. And what it allows you to do is shoot it off the net, too. You know, like, you're just trying to – the idea is that you're not getting it blocked. So you have guys like Ryan Pulock on the Islanders who just hits it as hard as he can. Bomb. And, you know, yeah. You know, and if he misses the net, fine, whatever. But he just mashes it. You know, the goal of Klingberg sifter is to get it through at a higher percentage rate. So, and when you hit the net, man, it sure finds holes when it goes through layers. So certainly it's worth teaching. And I just can't keep my head up that long without stick handling the puck into my own feet.
So the stories, but before you joined us, Stewie, we were talking a lot about the Tampa Bay power play and that returned yesterday. Braden Point scores. All of a sudden, the release valve is turned, and then Andre Palat scores on this gorgeous pass from Nikita Kucherov. What was the story for you last night in this game? How did you see last night's matchup?
Well, I was talking about this last night. It's just with the traffic. They had 23 shots in game one in the third period, but a lot of them were just twisted wristers from the wrist shot from the blue line, and Kudobin could see them. But what I noticed last game, they just had layers. They'd have one or two guys in front of Kudobin's eyesight, and what that does, it draws one or two of the Dallas defenders. So there's four bodies in front of the net there, and Kudobin, not being the biggest guy, he's got to now battle to find that sight of that puck. And you saw on the Palat goal, he's searching for that puck, thinking that Kucherov's going to do a one-timer, but that pass is coming through traffic. He had no idea that pass was coming because he was expecting shot. Same thing on the Shattenkirk goal. He couldn't really track that puck because there was four bodies in front. So when you get that traffic on a smaller goal, you have to get to that blue paint every single shift if you want to score, because Kudobin, he's on fire, and whenever he sees it, he's definitely stopping it.
Okay, so yeah. here becomes. Sorry, you want to follow up on that one, Justin? Go for it.
I just want to add that people complain about media talking about stuff like pucks in deep and getting in front of the goalie's eyes and us repeating that stuff. And there's a reason. It's because it's so super effective, and it's so important, and it certainly paid off for Tampa last night.
So the series is all tied, but I'm curious if you guys would agree with this so far, and if this is true. Then this is danger for the Tampa Bay Lightning, because we've seen, their power play has gone cold again, and it's tough to win series just based on our power play is going to destroy you. But would I be wrong if I said, again, this is just from, I spy with my little eye, in the first two games of the series, Dallas has been the better team 5-on-5, period. Would you guys say that's accurate?
Yeah, I mean, better's tough, but they've been as good as Tampa. And I just think, we tend to view things versus our expectations. And I think we expected Tampa to roll Dallas. But yeah, if you combine the two games at 5-on-5, the play has been pretty equal. Last game, I think there was probably a little bit of score effects involved where Tampa gets up and sits back a little bit. I think they're probably a little tired in game one. All that said, certainly it has looked that way to the eye. I don't know if I would expect that to continue, but if you're Dallas, you don't hate how things have looked so far. It looks like they can hang with Tampa, which you can't really say about the other teams Tampa's faced so far.
I think it's because Tampa, they're usually so dominant and they're so used to pushing the pace through the neutral zone that, for the eye test, they're not really doing that same thing. So I think they're equating that to Dallas dominating. But I think with Dallas, they're just playing a heavier game. They're playing it's more appealing to the eye. But I think Tampa Bay, I don't think they're really getting dominated at all in this series. They're still, every time Point gets the puck, he's a threat to score. Hedman's still a beast coming through the neutral zone. I think now, they're relying a little bit on their special teams being special. But 5-on-5, I think Dallas has an edge, but I don't think it's a big, wide gap. I think Dallas is just, everyone uses the term, they're playing a little bit sexier and it's more appealing to the eye. So that's a term I don't really like using in hockey, but I just used it.
All right, then. Mea culpa. Physician, heal thyself. Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne with us on Hockey Central. Okay, game three goes Wednesday. By the way, the series is all tied up at ones. Okay, let's try not to burn ourselves. We put our hand on the element here. The NHL Awards, and there were some huge ones handed out last night, starting with The biggie, the Hart Trophy, the player judged to be most valuable to his team. Again, the caveat is not best player, but most valuable to his team. Leon Draisaitl walks away with this one. And for purposes of full transparency, here is my... we were asked to submit five, the professional hockey writers. This is my five in order. I had Artemi Panarin number one, Nathan MacKinnon number two, Leon Draisaitl third, Connor Hellebuyck four. And I wrestled between Jack Eichel and Connor McDavid and went Edmonton center as my fifth. Stewie, Justin, what do you make of Leon Draisaitl and the Hart Trophy last night?
I'll start by saying I think they got it right just based on the fact that I think people put so much stock on Connor McDavid being the best player in the National Hockey League that it just sort of, you know, it adds a slight to Draisaitl's game. And for me, I think he was the most valuable because, you know, you're the best player in the world and Connor McDavid goes down, you're supposed to fall out of the playoff race. But he kept them in the playoff race. He kept them second in the Pacific Division, I think, at the pause. And with the best player supposedly, you know, falling out, you're supposed to fall out of that race, lose 6-7 in a row, and fall out of that playoff race. But they stayed in it. Draisaitl, he's been dominant when he's on the ice. So I know you're using the word most valuable to his team, but I'm thinking most dominant at coming in, putting up 5-6-7 point nights. So I understand the argument for Panarin, but did he really dominate and take over games like Draisaitl did? So that's you know, debatable. But I think whoever did not vote and did not have MacKinnon in the top five, I want them now to write a 100, you know, page essay on why they deserve to keep their professional writers award. And I think I'm going to start writing now, and I'm going to start getting out my coloring book so I can start writing it, and so I can get the vote and get it right here.
That's funny. You know what the problem with this conversation, Jeff, is like when you set out to make your case, and, you know, as I'm about to do, you know, I was going to make the case, so I didn't have Draisaitl at the top either. And so you end up sounding like you're taking away from a guy's year. You know, like I'm going to say, you know, Draisaitl only played six games without McDavid. People act like he was out for a month is one of the points I want to make. But I don't want it to take away from how great a season was. He was in my five best players of the NHL season and five most valuable players. He was on my ballot, too. I voted for Nathan MacKinnon. You know, I wrestle with how to vote for this award based, you know, historical context, literal definition, whatever. MacKinnon had no help this season with the injuries. He was, you know, double the second best player on his team in terms of points and drove his team to the top of a very tough division. I thought he's the best player in the league this year is what it came down to for me. But still,
go ahead.
No, go ahead, Stewie.
I was going to say if the Monstars come to Earth tomorrow and you have an AHL team, which player, based on their season, would give the Monstars a game? And I think that's Draisaitl, not
McKinnon. I love that. I love that example.
That's actually the literal definition.
Think about it, right? Just, you know.
You know how I think about it, Stu?
You know, obviously, the big point game, but just, you know, when he had his big game, the moments that he took over, when he scored his game-winning goals, when he made his big plays. And I think that's part, when you judge valuable, I think that's part of one part that you can't forget.
If you said to me tomorrow, you're starting a season fresh, and you can start it with one person season in the NHL this year, whose do you want? Whose season do you think sets your team up best to win the Stanley Cup this season? To me, the way that Nathan MacKinnon drove his team is the best. Draisaitl had like a month in December where he was minus 27.
And that's without watching an ounce of playoffs, and that's another thing, too, are people being biased with or the votes before or after playoffs?
Before playoffs.
They're all before.
But anyway, either way,
By the way, Justin, the answer to your question is Artemi Panarin. Here's another question. Who was the best player 5-on-5 all season long in the NHL?
This is the power play counts. It's still hockey.
Artemi Panarin.
I remember having this conversation with Dubas, and I was like, yeah, Nylander gets all his points on the power play. And he's like, do those points not count? Do we not have to play on the power play? Is it not important?
First of all, I want Stewie's definition of the Hart Trophy to be incorporated into the official definition last year, and it should be phrased like this. If aliens arrive, which player do we want out there to beat them? I think that's now...
That's a good one.
It's a criteria. Yeah. The criteria for Hart Trophy success. All right, getting behind here. May have to clean this up later after Bill Guerin is going to join us in a couple of seconds. Norris Trophy. It's won by Roman Josi. First Swiss hockey player to pick up an NHL award. First Nashville defenseman, shockingly, to win the Norris Trophy. I had him number one. And then Carlson, Hedman, I had Jacob Slavin at four, Alex Pietrangelo at five, and Shea Theodore at six. Justin, we'll start with you on this one. Yossi wins the Norris.
Yeah, I had him at two. I had the best defenseman in the world at one, and Victor Hedman. I was one of four people who voted for him. Carlson was on my ballot, not overly high up. I think he just snuck into the five spot, but it's a tough vote. It's a really tough vote. You know, we don't have points the way we do. You have to judge how much do you value new statistics versus your eyeballs. And at the end of the day, this one came down to more of a Stewie logic for me, is like, who's the best defenseman in the NHL this year? And to me, it's just Victor Hedman. So I tried not to beat myself up too much and just try to pick the guy who was the best, which is, I think, the point of the award at the end of the day.
Well, I don't want to poke holes in Justin's theory, but based on his voting for the heart there, Yossi had, you know, almost 20 points more than the next player, so why isn't he in that conversation? But, no, I like Yossi's game. I think Carlson's play sort of dipped off near the last quarter of the season, and he was just dominant, where I believe that he was leading that team maybe 30, 35 points at one point in the season. And,
yeah, early.
You know, with a team that had some forwards that were supposed to be stepping up offensively, he really drove the offense. And what I liked about him, he put the team on his back. He was going end-to-end, Jamie Benn, a lot of the times, and really dragging his team into the fight. So I think this was probably a tough decision in going, are you going to go Carlson, are you going to go Yossi? But I think Yossi's play near the end put him over the top.
And first year with the new deal, too. Okay, so we'll hit a break on that one. His new deal is coming up, by the way. We're going to come back and talk to Bill. Oh, man, did he ever get paid. And worth it. Like, and you know what the nice thing is? It's like a Judd Moldaver signature now, because he's the agent for Roman Yossi. The player's number is in the contract. Just like in Austin Matthews' deal, you will find the number 34.
What
in Roman Yossi's deal, you will find the number 59. That has become the Judd Moldaver signature to a lot of these contracts. All right, we'll hit a break. Minnesota Wild general manager Bill Guerin will be with us here in a couple of moments. He's been a busy guy. And then if we have a little bit of time, and we should, we'll get into the Calder conversation and the Vezina as well. We hit a break. This is Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Merrick, Stewart, and Bourne. We're back in a moment. Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday starting at noon. It's Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. We're standing by for Minnesota Wild general manager Bill Guerin. He's been the busiest GM. It's been the busiest team so far in the offseason, whether it's the Jonas Brodin signing, whether it's the Eric Staal trade, whether it's announcing that Mikko Koivu will not be returning, whether it's the Bjugstad deal. And I don't think anyone thinks for a moment that Bill Guerin and the Minnesota Wild are done or even close to being done so far. Stewie, before we bring Bill Guerin on, so far, I mean, we always talk about, you know, volume trading and who's the big mover, and a lot of the conversation sometimes revolves around Jim Rutherford. Listen, so far, the clubhouse leader for redoing his team is easily Bill Guerin so far.
Yeah, he's definitely been making a lot of moves. And what I like about this, he's not just being safe. He's not just sitting there making a couple minor moves. He's making moves that he feels is going to really improve this team. So that shows a lot of gall for a first-time GM, really going out there, putting his personal touch on this Minnesota Wild team. So is it going to work? We'll see. But I like them. There's a lot of moves here, and I know he's not going to be done. But so far, so good for the Minnesota Wild.
Justin, we'll get your thoughts in a second. Minnesota General Manager Bill Guerin joins us now. Bill, thanks so much for being along with us today. Want to start off, just on behalf of someone who works in media, thanks for giving us something to talk about on almost a daily, a daily rate right now. You've been a blessing and a gift for people at this end of the microphone.
Oh yeah, oh my pleasure. You know, I'm just here to please.
Well, I'll tell you what, like the one thing no one's going to accuse you of is, of course, standing pat, or I guess what's the old saying, the old Jim Collins book, good is the enemy of great. And it seems as if you want to set your team up for greatness, not just to be good and maybe squeak in the playoffs and maybe win around and maybe not. And that's kind of Like, we all know that's kind of been Minnesota's story for a long time now. It seems as if this is a situation where you are committed, true or false, to significantly changing this squad.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, with all due respect, these you know, the Minnesota teams that we've had here in the past, they've been good teams. It's just, you know, it's been a bit of a struggle to, you know, to get a little further in the playoffs. So, you know, I mean, hey, look, my job is to try to make the team better. And, you know, sometimes change is good. And a lot of times it's necessary. You know, I've just been trying to, you know, not just to make my mark, but just to make some improvements. And, you know, I've got a group of guys that I work with on a daily basis that help me, and we make educated decisions, and got a great pro scouting staff and a lot of good advice. So, you know, we're trying.
Bill Guerin with us. Justin, go ahead.
Hey, Bill, how are you?
Hey, Barney, how you doing, buddy?
You know, we were for... I'm good, man. One of the things that we saw here in Toronto when Brendan Shanahan got involved was he just took like a year before he did anything overly drastic to kind of figure out, you know, draw his own conclusions about the organization and how it's run internally and then sort of operated from there. You've taken your time, too, to assess that organization. I wonder what conclusions you've drawn over your time there about what needs to be changed or what you would like to see done differently in Minnesota.
Well, you know, I think when I got the job, everybody kind of made a big deal of the timing of it. And I actually think it was a blessing in disguise because I did. I got that year to kind of sit back and assess. And then, you know, as we kind of went along, we made some decisions and made some changes, you know, and we'll continue to do so. But, you know, I think this is just something, you know, a team that just actually just needed change. You know, if you keep doing the same thing year after year after year, it kind of gets tired, and you know, you need a little bit more of a spark. And you know, we have a good team, we have good players here, you know, every once in a while you just need to you know, mix it up a little bit.
Stewie.
You guys recently added Marcus Johansson with a trade with the Buffalo Sabres. Where do you see him slotting in this lineup, and what's your evaluation for him as a player?
Yeah, you know what, Stewie? He's I think he's a really talented player. He's very good on the power play. I think the one thing I really do like about him is the versatility that he has. As of right now, I think if we were starting today, we'd have him at center. I know he's spent a lot of time on the wing, and last year in Buffalo, it was kind of an adjustment. But, you know, the people that I've talked to are around the league that know this kid said he's very dedicated. He has the capabilities of playing center. He did for a long time, you know, before the NHL. So it's not foreign to him. But him, like Bukestad, they're guys that can go back and forth and play both. So, that's one of the things I really did like about him. And, you know, the skill package and the speed and the skating and all that stuff was definitely something that we liked as well.
You bring him in, at the expense of Eric Staal, and that's, I think it's 16 or 17 year veteran in the NHL. What was that conversation like when you had to move on from Eric and send him to the Buffalo Sabres?
It's tough. It's not an easy one. But one that you have to have. You know, I think a lot of people don't realize, you know, when you're watching games and seeing these guys on TV and the goals they score and the points they produce, that they're actually human beings, and they have wives, they have children. This upsets their life incredibly, and I know that firsthand. So it's not an easy message to deliver, but you owe it to them to deliver it, you know, as soon as possible. And that's what we did. And it's, you know, like I said, Eric's a good guy. He's a great player. He'll be great for Buffalo. It was a tough message, but one that, you know, you have to do.
Justin.
Bill, does it make it easier having been a player, or harder just because you know what these guys are going through?
You know, that's a great question. I think a little bit of both, because you know how much it's going to, you know, turn their life upside down. But then in the end, you do know that you know, you come through in the end okay. Like I said, I've been through it, you know, a bunch of times, and it's not the easiest thing, but you do come out okay.
Stewie, go ahead. You're on with Bill Guerin, GM of the Minnesota Wild, for those just joining us.
Joel Eriksson-Ek had a couple, you know, up and down seasons. He's 23 now. Are you guys looking for him to take the next step and have a bigger offensive role?
Yeah, you know what? That's something that Dean had talked to him about when we were up in the bubble in Edmonton. And it's just, you know, giving yourself a little more credit and giving yourself, you know, the freedom to expect to score. I think Ekki's probably heard so many times that he's a third line center, and you know, we've got all these other guys to produce. Well, you know, I'm sure he'd love to score more and play a little more offensive, and so it's just a matter of him feeling comfortable doing that and having the confidence that you know, if he takes a chance here or there, if he you know tries to score more, he's not going to be reprimanded for it. So he's got the capability. Our goalies hate when he's coming down the ice and taking shots on him in practice, because he's got an absolute rocket. And we just want him to be able to utilize the tools that he has to produce more.
I'm sure you know that this one's going to eventually lead into a Matt Dumba question here, but I want to ask first about the Seattle draft, which is, I think, at the back of, you know, every general manager's mind when they make moves this season, knowing that that's on the horizon. 7+3 or just 8 skaters? Do you have a preference?
We're not there yet. we do think about it, and we've gone over both scenarios, but obviously we don't have our decisions made yet, but you know, it's something that I think you're right. It's in the back of everybody's head and, you know, thinking about it and, you know, we'll be prepared for it. That's for sure.
And that, of course, leads to Matt Dumba with the three defensemen that already have that protection. You would be fine if the deal's not there, just going forward and saying, you know what, we may have wanted to do the 7-forward 3D scenario, but we're fine if it keeps Dumba in the mix, just going 8 skaters?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we love Matt, and we're gonna, like I said, we're gonna go over things, and you know, we don't know where we're gonna be, at that time. It could look a lot different than what we have on our board right now. So, you know, we're just trying to plan ahead, and we'll, like I said, we'll be ready for that.
Justin.
So, Bill, how much of it then going into just what I assume is a crazy time? What a crazy time to become a general manager, given the upcoming month and, you know, the world right now. How much of it is going into this time with the draft and free agency all kind of on top of each other and saying, all right, we want to do this, we want to accomplish that, versus just talking to everyone and seeing what's out there and then kind of deciding what to do after you find out what's available?
Yeah, it's a great time because you are touching base with everybody and kind of getting all your information. It's when I'm finding you really just have to have patience because, you know, there's no real pressure right now. Nobody's moving too fast. And,
right.
You know, I think the pressure will you know, mount as we get closer to the draft and free agency and things like that. So, it's just a little patience that you have to have, but definitely an exciting time of the year.
Stewie.
You guys recently locked in Brodin long-term and have Spurgeon locked in all-term. Do you think they're a 1-2 combination of most underrated defensemen in the National Hockey League?
You know what, Stewie? Yeah, I do. I think it's... It's definitely fair to say that. I can tell you firsthand that when I was talking to other general managers, one of the first names that would always come up would be Brodin. You know, he was a very sought after player, but you know, we just put such a high value on him. He's a He's a great skater. He's a one-man breakout. We were thrilled to get this contract done with him and keep him here long-term. And Spurge is, you know, I don't know how underrated he actually is in the NHL circle, just because everybody can see how good he is. I mean, he's not overly flashy, but I mean, when you look at his, I mean, he had 14 goals last year as a defenseman. That's not easily done. And, you know, defensively, offensively, power play, penalty kill, he can do it all.
Last one for you here, and we thank you for your time. We're in conversation with Bill Guerin, GM of the Minnesota Wild. Just a general thought on what we're seeing now in the Stanley Cup Finals. The Tampa Bay Lightning and the Dallas Stars, from your GM's eyeball and, of course, former player, what do you see in these two teams?
Well, you know what I mean? They're both, you know, they're both really well coached. They have a lot of high skill out there. You know, they're just honestly top to bottom. They're just two very good teams, good mix of veteran leadership and youth. But they're fun to watch. That's for sure. And you know, they're playing hard. So it's going to be an interesting, I think it'll be a long series.
Game three is on Wednesday, all tied up at once. Bill, this has been a lot of fun. I know that your adventure in redoing the Minnesota Wild is not anywhere close to done. Maybe you continue more conversations with Jim Rutherford. There's a nice trade battery there. We're eager to see what happens next with Bill Guerin and the Minnesota Wild. Thanks so much for keeping things interesting, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on. You guys take care.
There he is, Bill Guerin, the GM of the Minnesota Wild, a team, guys, that is quickly retooling. And, you know, Stewie, I'm glad you asked about Joel Eriksson Ek as well. And, you know, right now, if you look at the depth chart of the Minnesota Wild, he's sort of slotted as the number one center. With Eric Staal now in Buffalo, Mikko Koivu not coming back, all of a sudden your slotting has him at number one, maybe Marcus Johansson, which leads me to believe that the man we just spoke to is nowhere close to being done redoing this team.
Yeah, and I remember Ek coming in as a rookie because my brother was still there and paying close attention. And I'm not sure how high their expectations were, but I think they expected him to do what Kevin Fiala was going to do. So there's nothing wrong with being a good two-way guy. He's big, he's strong, he could really, really skate. But I asked that question because I think they're really expecting more from him offensively. You know, I think he's a 20. They want him to be a 20, 25 guy, you know, 50-point guy. And I don't think he's there yet, just yet.
Justin, have a quick thought on Minnesota before we hit the break.
Well, yeah, I do hope that they're not done, but I will say the one thing I admire is that he's not going in there and being like, well, we have some good players who we can't move because they're established here, so, you know, carry on with that. I really like the idea that it hasn't been working. They haven't been getting over the hump, and they need to do something differently. So props to him. It can't have been easy to tell those guys they're moving on.
Tried to move Zach Parise at deadline and couldn't make the money work with the Andrew Ladd deal with the Islanders. So, no, he's not sitting on his hands here and taking his time. Bill Guerin is getting things done in Minnesota. We're going to get some more things done here in a couple of moments as well. We'll go over the Calder that we saw yesterday, and also the Vezina, which went to Connor Hellebuyck. More Hockey Central in moments. Merrick, Stewart, and Bourne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. All right, just a couple of minutes here to wrap up the program, and I want to finish up with more trophy talk here, fellas. We talked about the Hart, Leon Draisaitl talked about the Norris with Roman Josi of the Nashville Predators. The Calder, this was coming down to Quinn Hughes and Cale Makar. It is the Colorado defenseman that ends up on top. Justin, your thoughts on Makar? Was he your choice?
He was my choice. I think all the times I had to listen to Colby Armstrong say he was like Nathan MacKinnon from the back end, put me over the top there. But to be honest, it just came down for me to those two guys. Which guy do you want on your team? Because both their seasons were so unbelievable. So it was a tight one. But yeah, Makar got my vote in the end.
So here's how it went for me. I had Hughes number one, Makar number two, Kubalik three, Adam Fox four, Mackenzie Blackwood, yes, over Elvis Merzlikins as number five. Stewie, your thoughts on Cale Makar winning the Calder?
Yeah, and Kevin Bieksa had Kubalik first. I'm not sure his vote counted because he's a rookie, but you know, scoring 30 goals is an impressive feat. And he's like, oh, they must have been on the power play. No, he had 24 even strength goals. So that's, I think, the last time a rookie scored 30 goals was Skinner, and he won it. So with Makar, again, just seeing him skate with that puck, he's dominant. He's skating through traffic. He's not afraid. He's almost like Barzal with the puck. That's who I think he is because, you know, usually when guys are going into traffic, they sort of, you know, cut up, you know, pull back or try to make a, you know, a move away from the play. He skates through traffic. So he was dominant. I think the only thing that, you know, put Quinn Hughes into the mix was that Makar got injured for a bunch of games this year. So Makar, I think he's the next trophy on his list is the Norris. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's in that conversation in the next year or two.
Hedman still, Seth Jones in that conversation. Haskinen will certainly be in there as well. It's going to be fierce for that Norris Trophy in the future. All right, the GMs vote on the Vezina. And Berkey always makes the point, why do the GMs vote on the Vezina? The one position we always miss at is goaltenders, but there it is. And it's Connor Hellebuck. If it came down to me, Justin, it would have been either Hellebuck or Jacob Markstrom. Which way would you have leaned?
Yeah, I thought Hellebuck was the right choice this year. I also love how much it meant to him. He said this is something he's wanted for a long time, so congrats to him for accomplishing that.
Awesome. Winnipeg
lost 46 defensemen on their depth chart this year, and the only reason that they were in this playoff conversation was Connor Hellebuck. So great choice by the GMs. They got it right this one.
Yeah, he wins the Vezina and got plenty of Hart Trophy consideration as well. So a lot of grist for the milling. A lot of conversation starters there, as it always is around trophy time. Smith & Jones is up next. Thanks for joining us on Hockey Central, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.